Hello, everybody. This is the Dream It Alive show. I'm your host, Ash Kumra, co-founder of DreamItAlive.com. The Dream It Alive show is all about talking with conscious individuals that are making the world a better place. We feature conversations with business mavens, self-help leaders, authors, inspirational pay-it-forward people, social entrepreneurs, nonprofit leaders, just everyday dreamers out there that are just making the world a better place and that can inspire us to become the best versions of ourselves. This episode is sponsored by DreamItAlive.com, which is a global community that guides you to create your dream life with visualization tools, dream boards, and helpful personal development content. Today's guest is a very extraordinary individual. His name is David Howitt. He is the founder and CEO of the Merriweather Group and the author of a sensational book called Heed Your Call, which is basically an inspiring book that really guides you to really live what I feel that dream life. David has a really awesome philosophy that I definitely share. I first heard about David from his TEDx talk that he had done a few months back, and I will forward that over to anyone who would like to hear it, and we'll make sure to share it publicly with this interview. And he really asked the world, specifically conscious, mindful individuals that really know their purpose or that feel that they can do more with their gifts, to repair the world. The world is huge, and we all live in our amazing environments, at least most of us, and there's many people in the world that don't have that divine wisdom or that divine calling or that divine conscious knowledge, and it's not because they are lesser than us, it's just because they simply haven't met that mentor, that person that can help them see that next day of light. Like, we all have had mentors, right? We've all had those inspiring people that can help change us and transform us. And David is asking the world, specifically us conscious individuals, to go find those people who need that help, those people that need to get on the, what you would call, the pathway to finding their own conscious divinity. And this conversation, we're going to really dive into how David feels we could all become more connected and fulfilled, and so that not only we ourselves become better, but we can also continue to repair the world and make the world an overall better place and make the whole world dream it alive. So, David, how are you today?
Hey, good. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
It's an honor to have you, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
I was mentioning before before I was introducing you, that you really gave an inspiring TED Talk. I mean, I read your book, Heed Your Call, which we'll get into, but I first kind of want to dive into your TED Talk and the rationale behind that. Would you mind just sharing with us a 101 on what your TED Talk
is about?
Yeah, no,
I'd love to.
Thank you.
No, absolutely. And by the way, thank you for the kind words on the TED Talk. So, you know, trying to give you a summary of what that TED Talk's all about. So fundamentally, the talk and, you know, a big aspect of my book, Heed Your Call, come down to sort of a few key thresholds, which is, number one, you know, our world that we all share and live in is in many ways fractured and in need of repair. And so if you start from the premise of we need to repair this world, it's where we live, it's our home, we need to build a place, a society, a connection that's enduring and that allows us to live in a place of abundance. And how do we do that? How do we make that happen? And from that place, you know, I started deep thinking and research and soul searching and started to really look at what currently exists in the world. You know, there's philanthropy, there are politicians, there are NGOs, there are, well-intended individuals, church groups, and each of those in their own way is, you know, making an effort to repair the world, to create a cohesive world for us to share. And in many respects, you know, I think they make good efforts, but in many respects, I think it falls short. And so I started to feel fairly, sad and pessimistic and sort of down. And I thought, well, there's got to be another approach. And I really started to think and dig deep. And it turned me to mythology and Joseph Campbell's work around the hero and around the hero's journey, around what is a hero and who is a hero in the modern world. And what does it mean to be on your journey? And in thinking about that, I thought, gosh, you know, the entrepreneur, you know, the individual who is constantly scanning the world and thinking, where has the world been deprived of innovation, deprived of newness, deprived of a better way? Where has there been stagnation? Where has there been a lack of evolution or revolution? And that entrepreneur then who feels just compelled to fix that solution or to create that solution and fix that moment, I thought, gosh, you know, that's a modern day hero. We should support that hero. And in doing so, maybe that will really help to repair the world. So as I looked deeper and started to write for Heed Your Call, I looked at, you know, a number of different spiritual belief systems and religious belief systems and the liturgy associated with each, and came across a really cool, really powerful set of constructs in the Judeo-Christian kind of belief system. And in Aramaic, there was this amazing phrase, Tikkun Olam, which literally translates into repair the world. Now, most, I think, modern-day folks interpret Tikkun Olam as philanthropy, as charity. And again, that's great. There's certainly a lot of great things about being a generous and giving individual. But as I read further, I noticed that the Tikkun Olam was really sort of built upon and was referenced heavily by another important phrase, that being Ruach Elohim, which literally translates into breath of God. But interestingly, as I delved in, it wasn't some external notion of God. It was the breath of God in each of us. And so the thesis started to develop that the way to create Tikkun Olam, the way to repair the world, was to return to our own innate ruach, our own innate divinity. So when we live from our place of purpose, as the Buddhists would call it, our dharma, when we live from our unique divinity, the thing that we're meant to do in this life, when we are in service to that, we repair the world. And that's effectively what the talk was about.
That's amazing. Wow. I mean,
thanks, man.
You know, some questions come to my mind. So one of the things we like to do with these interviews is we really like to understand the habits and rituals of individuals like yourself to reach this level. I mean, you clearly are in an elated state of mind. You're clearly on your own pathway of consciousness. And anyone who reads your book or hears your TED Talk will totally be drinking the David Howitt juice. And I mean that in a positive way.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you.
I'm curious, what habits do you do every day that helps you get to this state? I mean, I want to know specifics like meditation, diet, goal setting tools. I mean, we can do each of those things one by one, or you could just go off in free flow.
So, you know, firstly, what I want to say is, you know, the David Howitt, you know, drinking the David Howitt Kool-Aid, and I mean this with, you know, sincerity. I mean, there's this great quote from Hafiz, the amazing Sufi poet, and I'm going to get it sort of right here, but it's something to the effect of, I am just a flute through which the breath of the universe flows. Listen to the music. And I think that's true for all of us, that when we are in alignment with our purpose, with our dharma, with our path, with our heroic sort of opportunity, that we are a flute. We're a conduit for the universe, for God, for synchronicity. And so these words, my book, Heed Your Call, my TED Talk, you know, I feel just very grateful to be a conduit for what I know are paradigm, you know, sort of big, you know, thoughts of from the universe. You know, it's not really me. I just get to be, you know, a humble sort of conduit for those things, and I'm super grateful that I'm able to be that. But the things that I do to try to be a conduit, to try to be a flute, so that I am aligned in a way that I am able to discern and deliver and bring and, you know, mentor, guide, and teach, are you know, some of those things are the following. I mean, I really make time each day for meditation. And I know a lot of people hear that and they're like, oh God, you know, I got to go buy a meditation cushion and shave my head or, you know, put on some type of cloak and I'm going to have to take a pilgrimage to India and I don't have the ability or time in my life to do that. It, you know, that's ego trying to scare you. And, you know, because ego holds on very tightly and doesn't like change. But really what I'm talking about is just, you know, setting aside some time each day where you can quiet your mind and you can allow yourself to get in touch with yourself. And fundamentally for me, you know, meditation is not about stopping my thoughts. I mean, I think people's thoughts stop maybe when you die. So meditation is not about that. What it is about in my, you know, in my practice is about acknowledging that you are not your thoughts. You are the witnessing awareness that has the ability to, in a neutral way, witness thinking. So as you sit in a quiet place, or maybe your meditation's walking, try to find yourself in a place where you're able to acknowledge your thoughts, not connect to them, not judge them, not celebrate them, just, oh, thought, oh, there's a thought, oh, there's a thought, and start to identify that. If you're able to witness your thinking, then clearly you can't be your thinking. And this really magical, powerful thing starts to happen where the gap in between those thoughts becomes longer, incrementally, a fraction of a second, then a couple seconds, then maybe a few seconds, and maybe over time longer. And that space between those thoughts is you. That's your divinity. That's your soul. That's your connected nature. From that place, magic happens. That's where the really incredible stuff starts to happen. And the amazing thing, Ash, is it's available to all of us. You don't have to change your religion. You don't have to buy a bunch of books. You don't have to have a guru. You just have to make time to do this practice. And it is there for each and every one of us, no matter what. And that's pretty cool.
That is amazing. No, I definitely agree with you there. I'm curious, what specific type of meditation do you do, or like a breathing exercise? You're talking to someone who does meditation on a daily basis. I do breathing exercises, and I know a lot of our viewers are curious to know specific, you know, things so they can get inspired to find their own practice or do what you're doing, because what you're doing clearly works.
Yeah, so, you know, I for a long time, Ash, you know, started down the path of, you know, do I want to embrace mantra meditation or transcendental meditation or a Tibetan style or, you know, something else? And I think, again, the danger there is the ego can get caught up in that game of, you know, which one's better, which one has an older heritage, you know, where am I going to find the guru or teacher? And so what ultimately worked the best for me is when I actually sort of stopped that and I just decided to sit. I just decided to sit down and watch my breath and focus on coming back to the breath and focus on not connecting to my thoughts but observing my thoughts. And I don't know that there's any fancy name for that style of meditation. Some people may find that having a mantra is helpful. Some people may find that having you know, a particular type of meditation practice works for them, and that's awesome. I would just caution us not to get too caught up in having to label it or have a particular style or a particular guru. But actually, what's more important is just to make the space and to actually sit down and focus yourself in a way where you can listen to your breath. And, you know, an interesting, fun thing that I play with is sometimes is not thinking to myself that, okay, focus on my breathing, but focus on the fact that I'm being breathed, which I know sounds kind of funny, but really there's no effort in breathing, right? I mean, your heart beats, your lungs work, and you don't have to tell them to do it. So sitting there calmly and just noticing that you're being breathed, and, you know, really gently loving that sensation. And then as thoughts come, because they will, just think, oh, okay, there's a thought, you know, and let it go and return back to being breathed. And then another thought, okay, let it go, return back to being breathed. Do it for 5 minutes. You know, maybe a couple weeks later, start increasing to 10 minutes. That is really what this is about. It's less about having to label a particular style or a particular, you know, way.
Okay. Okay. No, that's well said. Curious, one more question on this subject matter before we dive into your other habits. Who was your mentor that got you into this way of thinking and this lifestyle, the meditation side?
Yep. So what really, for me, was a huge, I would say, catalyst. Because I had been circling around this for a long time. Like a lot of us, you know, I was at a place in my life where I felt like I was stuck. You know, it's like, okay, you know, I'm married, I've got kids, I've got, you know, a job. I kind of have checked all the boxes, you know, and why am I still feeling alone? Why am I still feeling somewhat disconnected? How come there's still fear and anxiety? Why, you know, what is this? I'm sad, you know, what is this? And I started to sort of not feel okay with that. You know, it was sort of like, life is not meant to be sad, and life is not meant to make you feel disconnected and fearful and anxious. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of us start to feel that way, and we run from that feeling. And we run to things, some of them are labeled good, and some of them are labeled bad. You know, so we run to working all the time, or exercise, or, you know, we run to gambling, or drinking, or too much time on social media. And I think that, you know, when I finally sat with that feeling long enough, I decided I want to try to sit with it and look at it, not run from it. And so I found myself signing up for a retreat at the Chopra Center, Deepak Chopra's center in Carlsbad. And, you know, if you know, knowing me better, you would, you know, at the time you would have said, whoa, you know, that's weird for David, you know, kid from the Midwest, football player growing up, you know, heading off to the Chopra Center. But it did, for me, create a big shift and the opportunity for me to start delving into this work in a really meaningful way. So if I were to sort of say, you know, who has been my teacher, my guru, who kind of got me on the path, I would have to say Deepak Chopra.
Okay, okay. Well, you want to talk about mindfulness, spirituality, I mean, synonymous with a lot of stuff he's doing. So that's awesome. I'm curious, just to segue into your other habits before we dive into your book, I'm curious, what role has diet and goal-setting tools played? Because you've accomplished a lot. You're a very successful executive and entrepreneur, and you inspire a lot of people. Is it fair to say that diet and goal-setting tools have had a role in this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that having goals and being mindful and, you know, checking in is really important. And I'm a big believer in what I call the power of and. You know, and means that you don't just go to the ashram and meditate and do yoga all day and chant. It also means that you don't just go to work and, you know, get after it in business and in commerce and do that all day. It's merging the two. I mean, the word yoga means union. So it's the union of being a householder and being in the world and having things like a checking account and car payments and kids and life, and also having mindfulness, yoga, meditation, exercise, drinking enough water. And so I think lists and goals and tasks are good in a context of an overall union of sort of left and right brain or yin and yang or east meets west, that, you know, my worry is that it's easy, you know, to have this be reduced to just another thing on your to-do list. And that isn't necessarily a healthy thing. Like, oh, shit, I didn't get my meditation in today, you know, and you suddenly get down on yourself and it's just another thing that, you know, it's like going to get your car washed. That is not what a goal list or a task list should be. You know, it's more about loving yourself and giving yourself permission to do the things that allow you to be an awake, authentic, whole human being in the world. And so, you know, interestingly, having just come through New Year's, there's a lot of people out there talking about bucket lists and about resolutions. And, you know, this interesting thing, and I need to make sure I don't say bad words, but I started to think about a different kind of list, not a bucket list, but an FCK list, you know, and the things that I don't want to do anymore, the things that don't serve me, that aren't healthy or helpful. I think in some ways those are as important to have on your to-do list as the things that you do want to do.
Okay. What about, have you ever done vision boards or dream boards or anything of that situation, you know, like a visual collage of things that you can subconsciously focus on? What's your experience with that?
I think those are awesome. I mean, I think any way, and different things work for different people, any way you can take your intentions, the things that you hold as intentions, and create visual reminders for yourself is a good thing. For some people, that may be a vision board. For other people, it may be carrying, you know, a particular stone in their pocket. For others, it might be a certain type of ceremony that they do each day. But yeah, absolutely. You know, what Deepak says is, you know, what we put our intentions towards and then place our attention on is likely to manifest. So intention and attention are great things.
Nice. I totally agree with that. And speaking along the lines of making audacious goals happen, I have to say I was fortunate enough to read your book before this interview, and it's very inspirational. I mean, I'm a big book junkie. I read books every day, literally. And your book kind of melds, I think, spirituality practices with everyday audaciousness, like that ambitious person, whether it's in their personal life or in their business life. I think they could take some segments from your book and, you know, really see that, is what I'm doing really purpose-driven? Is it really repairing the world, or is it very egoic-driven? What was your kind of foundation or rationale for creating this book?
You know, it's a great question. So I did not start the process of writing the book from a place of, I'm going to write this and publish it and get it out in the world. It was more like it needed to be birthed. It was something inside of me that was just yearning to get out. And so it came from a really holistic place of wanting to just put some stuff that was really in my heart and in my soul onto paper without really knowing where that was going to go. I mean, I think each of us in our lives have probably had those types of feelings where it's like there's just something inside of you you need to get out. And unfortunately for a lot of us, you know, ego steps in and says, well, you don't have time for that, or that's silly, or what are your parents going to think, or your spouse is going to lose her mind, or your boss is going to fire you. And so we sublimate those things. We push them back down in. Well, for this point in my life, I didn't do that. I allowed myself just to say, okay, you know, something feels like it wants to get out, I'm going to make room for it to get out. And in that really was kind of how it happened. And so I would encourage everyone, if there's something, you know, you want to take an art class, or you've always thought about studying a martial arts, or you're interested in trying fly fishing for the first time, or signing up for, you know, a marathon, or whatever it may be. You know, give yourself some permission to start living from that place a little. You don't have to quit your job. You don't have to, you know, leave your marriage. Just give yourself a little space to start playing with it. I mean, I think, again, too often our minds and our society tell us that they have to be these huge pendulum swings, that we have to go from, you know, okay, I'm this accountant who doesn't like my job and I'm feeling a little bit stifled, and then, you know, you say, well, you know what, this isn't working for me anymore. I'm going to quit my job tomorrow and I'm going to go move to, you know, India. I would say, you know, take a step in that direction. Give birth to a little bit of that. And what I found is when you do that, the universe says thank you and will reward you. Doors will start to open. You'll meet people. Stuff will start showing up in your life that will then give you permission to take another step in that direction. And it's a gentle process. So, you know, the book came from a gentle process of me allowing myself permission to make space over the course of, you know, a little over a year to just make room for this.
Okay, that's cool. Well, how's the response been? What are some of the things that readers have told you, or your own close family and friends have told you after reading it?
So, you know, I've been incredibly humbled and overwhelmed with unbelievably positive response. I mean, you go on Amazon and there are like, you know, 70 or more five-star reviews of people saying, you know, ranging from like kids in high school to CEOs to teachers to artists who have said, you know, this book has, you know, been incredible for me in so many different ways. And I've had an outpouring of, you know, emails and outreach to me, just thanking me for, you know, for the book and for what it has meant in terms of allowing people to start to feel they can actually live from a place of their truth, and then providing them with real tools and tools that, you know, I've seen in my life exhibited, you know, in the real world. I mean, I tried to write the book from the perspective of a bridge between wanting to live a life of purpose and meaning, and also acknowledging that for many of us, we have bills to pay and a life to live in the real world. And how can we have both? And so I think you know, it's been a great thing for a lot of folks. And that's been amazing for me. And I feel really, really grateful again to sort of be that flute.
That's awesome. What's next for you? I mean, you've done this amazing, or let me take a step back. You have been a really successful entrepreneur. You have built a thriving practice. You have channeled your own divine purpose, wisdom, whatever you want to call it, to inspire others with this audacious TED Talk. You wrote a kick butt book. What's next in your journey?
Right. You know, the honest answer is I don't know. I'm trying really hard not to stress or worry too much about where, you know, where my path is going to lead. Instead, I'm in a place of surrender and openness that if I just get up every day and I try to live from a place of alignment and truth, and I do my best to be an awake, an authentic person, that the doors will open, the guides and mentors will show up, and I, just like all of us, will continue to walk on my path. And for me, that's actually not only enough, it's actually really, really rad. It's really cool to live that way. So that's how I'm coming at it these days.
Okay. Well, my final question is, and this is more of a mentorship question, if you could talk to a 21-year-old version of yourself, and I know there's a lot of younger people in this world too that have had similar situations like you at 21 years old, what would you say to that person?
Wow. That's a really great question. I would say as much time as you spend activating in the outside world, spend a little time activating in your internal world. Give yourself permission to carve a little time each day for yourself to get quiet with yourself. And know that from that place, a lot of insight, opportunity, and direction will become available to you. And I would also say to that person, there's an opportunity for you to kill it financially, to have a great life of, you know, all the things that you want in the material world, and to have a life of purpose and meaning and connection and kindness and intuition that you do not have to choose. You know, again, the power of and versus the tyranny of or, that you can have it all.
Okay. Well, David, thank you so much for doing what you're doing for the world, and thank you so much for being on this interview, and I can't wait to see continued success. I know we'll be in touch this year, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. Great questions. I really, really appreciate the chance to be on with you, and have an awesome day and weekend.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.